Welcome to the seventh and final in a series of podcasts for the Powell River 50-Mile Eat Local Challenge for 2009. My name is David Parkinson. I'm one of the organizers of this year's Eat Local Challenge, which ran from Sunday, August 9th until Sunday, September 27th, during which time a number of people in the region ate as much as they could from sources within 50 miles of where they're living. You can find us on the web. We have a blog at pr50.wordpress.com. This podcast lives at pr50.podomatic.com. And if you have any questions about the Eat Local Challenge or local food and food security in general in the Powell River region, you can contact me at 604-485-2004 or by email at david@prfoodsecurity.org. So in this week's final installment of the seven-part series, I was lucky enough to be able to sit down with Lynn Adamson, who is the originator of the 50-Mile Eat Local Challenge up here in Powell River, because I thought it would be sort of interesting to conclude the series with a bit of a historical look back at how it all got started and where it came from, and some thoughts from Lynn about where it might all be headed. So it's quite an interesting little conversation this week. So let's go to it now. Enjoy. Okay, Lynn, so why don't you tell us a bit about how the 50 Mile Eat Local Challenge got started up here?
Sure. I guess as many things, for me, the 50 Mile Challenge started around a conversation over dinner. And my partner's kids were up from Vancouver, and we were enjoying some fine food, and they started talking about what James McKinnon and Alicia Smith were doing in Vancouver, because they knew them, and so they knew that they were in the middle of this Eat Local 100-mile diet, and we just started chit-chatting about, wow, wouldn't it be fun to do something like that in Powell River, because we're landlocked, we're ferry dependent, and it could be a great experiment to see, could we, within our own area, you know, support ourselves? And so that's where it originated from.
So that would have been 2005, maybe? Is that the year that those guys were really, like, hard at it?
Gosh, yeah, either 2005 or 2006, I can't recall. Yeah.
So 2006 was the first year we did it here, right?
Right, so it must have been 2005 then, yeah. And so, probably in the fall or so, and James and Alyssa were about 6 months into their challenge by then.
Okay, right. So did you talk to them about it before starting it here, or you just launched into it and then contacted them to let them know what you were up to?
No, I phoned them up and said, what do you think if we tried to do an experiment? They were so game. They were like, you know, absolutely, that would just be such fun. And I asked them for some tips, and they directed me to their blogs. They had their 100-mile site up by then. Or I think they were just working on their site. I guess they had some information, because they were still in the process of writing their book. And so they thought it would be wonderfully fun, and they gave me some resources. They introduced me to Farm Folk, City Folk in Vancouver. Oh, yeah. And some other groups have been trying to do some sort of local war type things, yeah.
So were there other municipalities or regions that were doing it at that time, or was it really just James and Alyssa?
Yeah, it was just James and Alyssa at that time. We were kind of a new thing. By the time we got ready to go in the spring, to do the first year challenge, there was a group, and I think that they were in California somewhere, that were calling themselves the Local Vores.
Oh, yeah.
And they were trying to do an experiment for, I think it was about 5 or 6 weeks also, that they were starting off with.
So it was 6 weeks in the first year, is that right?
First week was 5 weeks. It was intended to be, what was it now? We were going to do 50 people for 5 weeks within 50 miles.
Okay.
And so it was 5 weeks the first year.
And this is something that a lot of people ask me, and I come up with a made-up answer, but I'm not sure it's the right one. So why 50 miles instead of 100?
Well, that was because of, I guess, that conversation around our dinner table of, could we keep it within our own food shed?
Right. Okay.
And so as soon as we went to 100 miles, it included Vancouver, and we almost thought that's cheating, right?
Okay.
We really wanted to see, could we keep it local?
Yeah.
And, but the 50 miles allowed us to get over to the Comox Valley and down to Nanaimo, and we knew that would be important for milk and dairy and some of those products that we just weren't producing here, or at least that I wasn't aware, and I'm now aware that we are producing some of those.
Yeah.
But at the time, I wasn't aware.
Mm. Okay, well, that's good, because that's more or less the answer I tell people. So, but now we have it officially on, you know, on the permanent record. So you launched it, and the idea was 5 weeks, 50 people, 50 days. So you did the 5 weeks and the 50 people, 50 miles. I'm garbling it all, but you know what I mean. So you got a lot more than 50 people, though, right?
Yeah, we went to CD Saturday, and I was actually working on my master's, and I'd asked the people at my school if I could use this as my master's project, and originally they said no. Because they had concerns, catch this, they had concerns that we'd be asking people to change their diet, and therefore there could be liability attached to that. I said, I don't think anybody will starve their children just because they signed up for a challenge. But the first person I talked to at the university when I was trying to get permission for it said no. And so I actually changed my thesis and did my entire preamble for my thesis on a completely different subject. And then when I went back to school, and it was just prior to CD Saturday, maybe 6 weeks prior, I went back to school, and the first person I talked to there said, no, that'd be a great idea. It would be a great project. The project's all about community and community change and kind of recording how that might happen. And so while at school, I had to rewrite my thesis intro, and then I phoned up some people. I phoned my partner, and she got Jill Goodrian to help out, and my partner Kathy Mack, and some other people, and they got ready to do the CD Saturday table. And so I wasn't even around, so it was those guys really that launched it originally. And so then Kathy phoned me and said that they had over 50 people sign up right there and then at CD Saturday.
Mm.
So that's when we started changing it. Said, okay, maybe 250 people for 5 weeks within 50 miles. And so, yeah, it was really exciting to have it have such a great reception right off the get-go.
Yeah. And so the first year, too, it was in July, August kind of time. Is that right?
Yeah. And to be honest, that was around my thesis schedule. I had to be able to finish my recording of information by, I think it was September 1, to meet the university's deadline. So we tried to work with that time frame and to have the 5 weeks finished by then. So we started somewhere in July and went through to the end of August. And then we realized, you know, and of course, I was learning as I went. This wasn't my area of expertise at all, and I didn't know much about local sources of food. I didn't know many of the farmers. It was completely a reach, and so I hadn't even really thought too much about how much food would be available. I figured there'd be some available, but of course, what we realized is that it's much easier to do if you do it later in the season after the harvest is coming in for more things. And so the second year we changed it to a later date. And started it, later in August.
And then made it 6 weeks, is that right? Because it was 6 weeks the first year I was up here.
Yeah, maybe it was, maybe it could have been by the third year we went 6 weeks. Maybe it was the second year, I can't recall it.
I think it
was the second year, because I'd read a report somewhere that said that 6 weeks forms a habit.
Oh, yeah.
And that if you do something for 6 weeks, a habit is formed. And so we thought, okay, well, let's go for 6 weeks and make sure that we're actually forming new habits.
Yeah. Okay, so year two, that was the year that we moved up here. And I always tell people that we knew three things about Powell River before we kind of took the plunge and decided to move here and give it a go. And one was the 50-mile Eat Local Challenge. Two was the GMO-free zone declaration that the regional district put out. And then the third one was the Flying Yellow Bread Bowl, because there'd been a little article in the Vancouver Sun, I think, about, you know, some of the Sunshine Coast's funkiest little lesser-known eating places. So So yeah, I remember reading that thing in the Tai, right?
Yeah.
The famous little, to me, famous thing about, what was it, Powell River, BC's unlikely local food capital or something like that, right?
And that was James and Alyssa by that time started blogging about us and what we were doing up here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was very cool. So then did you get, was there more like a provincial or even national press on it? Like, did you get calls from people all over the place?
Yeah.
Learn more about?
I think my furthest call was from Philadelphia. And I had calls from Peterborough, somebody in Nova Scotia, somebody in Smithers, a lot of calls from people around BC, maybe five or six people. And people just curious, how did we do this and how was it going and how would they start up their own type of thing. And sometimes people just, I guess they got my email out of the Peak or something or off the Tai. And so some people just found me and were just kind of calling to kind of just say, congratulations, way to go. But a lot of people are curious, how could we do something like this ourselves?
And so, I mean, basically you did it on a zero budget, right? The first year?
Yeah, we had no budget at all.
Yeah. And, I love projects like that. Very inspiring, right? You can get out of the gate with no money at all. So yeah, the second year was the year that we moved up here, and then year three last year, and this year was year four, finally, getting to the end of it. So what do you see as some of the real long-term effects? Because I know your thesis, which I actually read, you know, you were just looking at the very kind of short-term effects in the community and on the individuals participating in that thing for the first year. But now it's year four, so like, what kind of real effect is it having in the community? In your opinion?
Gosh, I mean, really, we'd have to talk to participants to know that definitively, but here's what I think I'm seeing in the community is it gets harder and harder to sign people up for the challenge because people say, I'm already doing it. Mm. And I think for a number of people, it has become a habit. I know in my household, it's become a habit, and friends of ours, it's become a habit. And we just shop differently now. We don't eat 100% local all the time. And you know, for sure, there's days that we, you know, just go to the supermarket. But generally speaking, because we have these new sources of food that are within our radar now, it's so easy just to go up to the farm and get our sausages or go here for our eggs or go here for our vegetables. Uh-huh. And we are growing more food ourselves now. And I noticed that from a lot of people that participate in the challenge that, and that's through a number of people's initiatives. So it's through your initiatives, David, and other groups in the community that are making it easier for people to learn how to grow food and to, encourage people to just have their own little food shed in their own backyard. So I think what's happening is people are taking it to the next step. How do I do this more time in the year? How do I preserve the things that I'm now growing? And I think that's amazing because that's all about food security, you know? And so I think that it's, food security in our community has a long way to go until we truly are, you know, able to produce enough food to feed ourselves, which I think we're a far cry from there. But I think there's more awareness out there that it's somewhere we should be going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this year I had a number of people. I think, you know, to some people it's kind of like the thrill of the 50-mile challenge in the summertime is kind of wearing off because, as you're saying, it's sort of fading into the background of the things they normally do, right? Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know, it's like saying, let's, you know, spend 6 weeks of the summer, like, cleaning our house, and then you get a bunch of people say, but we clean our house year round, you know, what's the deal? So, but this year, a lot of people were saying, you know, we should really try to do a kind of eat local challenge in the winter time, but that's super hard, right? Because you can do it in the summertime at the drop of a hat, right? You can sign up on the day before it starts and pretty much coast through it, but you can't sign up the day before it starts in the winter and think you're going to have much luck, right? You need to have prepared in the summertime and done all your canning and putting food by and all that kind of stuff. So that's one way to take it to the next level for sure. But that would be hard work.
Well, it's I think we're on our way there too. Like there's more workshops on winter gardening and people are starting to become aware that we can grow food here in the wintertime. So I think that it would be a fun challenge. And Jeffrey at Bemused, we actually had a crew from Australia got interested in the story, and they came to do a story on our Eat Local Challenge. And Jeffrey at Bemused in February put on a completely local meal,
That's
every speck of it. And So it can be done. It's a matter of sourcing.
Not all of which is strictly legal, as he said when I interviewed him a few weeks ago. Yeah.
So I think it's something that we should be aspiring for, and get everybody to grow a row in the wintertime, and at least get some of their greens out growing, and you know, kind of keep the movement moving.
Yeah. And so another thing is, like, it's amazing how many communities are doing this sort of thing now, eh? I mean, I've lost count, really.
Yeah.
How many communities around the continent, pretty much, are having their own version of some kind of a local food thing, you know, many with different ways of doing it. So it's kind of funny that, I don't know, Powell River was pretty much the first, right, to pick up on James and Elisa's little project. And have you talked to them at all, like, since the first or second year? They came up here, in fact, right?
Yeah, they came up to open the challenge for us. So they came up to, James came up to do an opening the very first day. I'm trying to think of when's the last time I chatted with them. It's probably, we drop an email every now and then to each other, James and I. So, but I don't think I've chatted with them this year about what's going on. I know he's really busy with a new venture now.
So what
and,
are they doing?
They're doing another, James is anyway, a book on sustainability with some different partners.
Okay.
And on kind of global sustainability. And so he's been really busy with that.
Hmm.
And
so is that like his sort of academic background? I really don't know much about. Like, what got the two of them into doing it?
Oh, you know, when I chatted with them, it was a whim. Like, it was, and they didn't prepare for it at all.
Uh-huh.
And they started in March or some ridiculous time with very little food available. And they thought it would be kind of easy. They didn't realize it was going to be so difficult. And they don't drive, so they were on their bikes, you know, trying to source local food in Vancouver. And there are lots of local markets, so they thought that it would be, I think, easier than it was in the end. And I think, similar to me, when I first started, I hadn't really paid attention to everything that's on my plate and didn't realize I'd be losing sugar and a number of spices.
Wheat.
And all the things that we eat that are wheat-based, right? It's just amazing. And we ate a lot of eggs.
And potatoes, probably.
Yeah, and potatoes later, yeah. And so for James and Melissa, I think it started off as an interesting challenge that they may or may not have thought from the very beginning we could write a book about this someday. But I think they realized fairly soon into it, oh my goodness, there's a story here that it's difficult, even in Vancouver, in a climate where we could grow year-round in Vancouver. It's difficult to find food that's grown locally within 100 miles.
Right.
Yeah.
So another thing I've been wondering about, sort of turning around in my head during the course of the 50 days of this thing this year, is it still feels like, you know, there's an awful lot of people out in the community, like around the region, who really have, like, no or very little engagement with local eating, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just normal folks who just go to the grocery store like regular people do. And I'm wondering if you have any brilliant ideas about how we can sort of take that to the next level too, right? Because, of course, you know, you get a lot of the usual suspect kind of people engaging with the 50-mile Eat Local Challenge, right?
Yeah.
The ones who are just... That's what they do, right? Every time you go out shopping and you think, can I get this locally? If so, that's what I would prefer to do, even if it costs a little more or, you know, maybe looks a little ragged around the edges or something like that. But I keep thinking, how can we, you know, really reach out into the broader community and hit people with the message?
The unaware people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know definitively. I mean, I've got some ideas of things that I think will just happen naturally, but they might not happen fast enough to be sustainable. So like at the movie Food Inc. last week, they coined a phrase that I think I also actually used way back in my early research, that at the end of the day, every consumer can vote on where you want to get your food by where you spend your dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there has to kind of be a kind of a stream of a number of different things happening at once. We have to have more local food in people's faces so that they can see it, like at the open air market and at the grocery stores that are now labeling food that is local and such. And then people become more aware that, oh, this is a choice. And what will I think inevitably happen, not that I am looking forward to it, is that as the conglomerates get more and more control over our food, we're going to see our prices rise, right, with peak oil and such. And the food that will be sustainable and that has actually a chance of competing in that game will be the local food. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where we'll end up down the road, and the unaware people will become aware that this is actually a more healthy and sooner or later and actually a cheaper model for food. But right now, when it can be mass produced and shipped and you don't see those prices, you don't see those costs, I think that until, you know, people's dollars get affected, then some people just won't become aware. And unfortunately, the scary part of that is that if people don't become aware in time, we won't have the capacity to actually solve the problem ourselves. And that's what kind of gets me excited about this initiative, is it's starting to build capacity, but there's still so far to go before we could actually take care of ourselves in the event of some global catastrophe or just prices getting out of control.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that we can, you know, sort of keep building the capacity at the right pace, you know, to keep abreast of all these other developments. Do you have anything more you want to throw into the mix about the 50-mile challenge?
Well, I guess for everybody out there who's doing it, practicing it, or trying it, you know, congratulations, and because you are helping to, you know, create a sustainable food source right here in the community. It's not just about what you're putting on your own table that hopefully you're enjoying, but it's also, this is what's going to feed the movement, is to keep on having, creating a demand for the local food will create, you know, people to, an economy for people to make local food. And so we just need to keep going and tell your neighbors and invite them to a potluck of local food and tell them why you do it.
Great. I couldn't put it better myself. And I'd like to thank you, Lynn, on behalf of the whole region and everyone who's concerned with local food for, you know, being inspired to start this idea, which has really taken off, and, you know, kind of nurture it in its first few years.
Thanks.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
That concludes my conversation with Lynn Adamson, the program director at CareerLink here in Powell River and the originator and main motivating force behind the Powell River 50-Mile Eat Local Challenge from the very beginning in 2006. And this concludes the 7-part podcast series for the 2009 50-Mile Eat Local Challenge. Thanks for listening. As always, intro music is provided by Puerto Rican band Balloon. The track is called Snow, S-N-O-L. Outro music is by Canadian artist Alistair Thompson. The track is called The Long Winter and comes from his E-album Infinities. And this podcast, as usual, is released to the World Wide Web under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. And if you have questions about that or this podcast or the 50-Mile Eat Local Challenge or food security in and around Powell River, feel free to contact me at 604-485-2004. Or David at prfoodsecurity.org. Thank you for listening.